Hi, I'm Grant Wall, and welcome to the Planet Football Podcast, where I go in-depth with the most intriguing people in the world of soccer. In this episode, I'm joined by Julie Stewart-Binks, whom American soccer fans got to know as a terrific host and sideline reporter for Fox Sports and ESPN. She fills me in on what she's doing now, including New York City stand-up comedy, and that returning to regular soccer work may be in her future as well. Just a quick reminder, it's a huge help if you subscribe to, rate, and review the podcast. It helps people find us. Onward! Our guest today is one of my favorite people in the soccer media in North America, Julie Stewart-Binks. Thanks for joining me.
Grant, thank you so much. That was so sweet. You're one of my favorite people in the soccer media in North America as well.
Thank you. And notice that I said North America, my Canadian friend. Mm-hmm. Didn't say U.S. media. But you're also one of my favorites in the U.S. media, too. And are like a lot of soccer fans have gotten to know you in recent years. I first met you, I think it was the fall of 2013.
Yeah.
When you were hosting on FS1, the one for fun.
Yes, that's when it used to, it was Fox Sports 1 before it went to FS1. The one for fun, Fox Soccer Daily, was our hit show for about 4.5 months until it is now dead and buried.
Rest in peace. Yes. But that's how I met you. And then we worked together quite a bit over the following years, whether it was MLS or
Gold Cup, we did.
Women's World Cup.
All different events.
I recall you working, I think it was something like 60 straight days on the road in the summer of 2015.
Yes. And I always remember, thank you. You got me a massage because you knew that I was so drained and dead. And I remember that I was going crazy by then. Like, I was psycho by then. So it really meant a lot that you helped me with my mental health and wellness.
Glad to have helped. I think that was day 53 of your road trip in Philadelphia before the Gold Cup final, not involving the U.S. I looked at you and said, you know what? You're going to get a massage. My treat. And I'm going to get one too because I've been on the road for like 30 days.
Hey, that's the best idea ever.
And we have lots to talk about because you've done great work in soccer journalism for Fox, for ESPN, mostly in sideline reporting, a lot of it, and doing it far better than I ever did it, which is, I mean, totally serious here. and we miss you in the soccer world here in the U.S. because I thought you brought a lot to broadcasts on Fox, on ESPN, in terms of how you approached what I learned myself is a very difficult job of sideline reporting. And before we get later to why aren't you still with us since you were so good at it, I was just curious to start, what did you experience and what did you learn about sideline reporting so that you were able to bring such an informative view to a broadcast?
Well, I think it's an interesting position because it's so much more difficult than people realize, as you would know. So you have your analyst and your play-by-play person who are really sort of painting the whole game, and they tell you what you're looking at, but then background stories, information about strategy and da da all this stuff. But as a sideline reporter, you are trying so hard to get into the game. Like, you are, people don't realize this, but so your microphone is closed and you can talk to your producer through it. And you say, hey, I can add. Hey, I got more on this. Like, because you're always listening to the broadcast because you want to be able to whatever stories you already have planned. And then stuff you see and hear is, you know, stuff you see and hear is number one, because that's why you're right down there. But then you also, I used to do before a game, my own interviews. Maybe I would do 5 or 6 different players, and then I would, maybe they're about 10-minute interviews each, I'd whittle it down to one sentence that they would each say. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, Clint Dempsey, blank on this guy, because you know you also have very little time, and then you got a case of maybe you have your 6 interviews, your one nugget on each, and then you rank them like 1 to 6. And then maybe one of those things gets on air.
Right.
Which is very difficult for your ego. Sure. And also for the amount of work that you put in. You're like, wait a second, this is all really great stuff. How's this not getting on? And to me, like, I approached every game as if almost like I was playing in it. Like, I need to have a good performance. What can I do to be different? How can I enhance this? Sure, I could tell something that was, that's already been known, and I kind of can add a little bit more about that. But no, like, you have to make sure every word and every time you're on air, you are telling people something they don't know, like that they can't just look up online, right? Because you have the access and you're right there. So then, and credit to Katie Witham, who always, and I've said this before, she always kept me wanting to get better, because when I worked at Fox, she and I kind of like split some games in my first year, and I'd watch her, and she just always was such, she always did such a good job and made me better. And so I remember she would go talk to coaches on the sideline. She already had worked in the league for many years, had great relationships. So I thought, okay, Julie, you got to be doing this too. And then I would make friends with trainers or assistant coaches and say, no, I need to have, if something happens, we need to give some more insight or whatnot. And the league is great. And all the teams have been, for the most part, very easy to deal with in when we say, hey, I pushed it to the very limit in my last year where I would say, okay, excuse me, can I get like Greg Berhalter to talk to me at the 30th minute and the 70th minute? And we kind of like, okay, sure. But you got to ask, right? Because you'd think there's no way a head coach would talk to you in the middle of a playoff game, right? Or lo and behold, an MLS Cup final. But you have to push it. And you know me, like, I would push it so hard to just, like we're down there for a reason. I need to get the latest and most relevant information.
This is
and
especially so, where you were better at this than I was, because you know, like, you definitely do your prep work and you got to do that, and you got your nuggets coming in, but you have always been fearless about, during a game, going to places where you're not even really supposed to go.
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes.
And Women's World Cup, that got to me.
and it's awesome. And, you know, I just myself, like, never totally did that enough, but like it really does provide something that no one else can provide if you can get someone on the bench, mm-hmm. whether it's an assistant or even a head coach, to explain, like, here's why we're making the change right now, and I can tell you exactly what they're thinking.
Yeah, and I mean, Alexi Lawless, when I worked at Fox, really let me handle kind of a lot of the subs, even though I'm not a former U.S. international soccer player, or Canadian for that matter. But to be honest, getting to, like, when I would say, you know, assistant coach, you know, whoever that might be, I needed to explain this change, I would use that as an opportunity to ask other questions to them. Okay, wait a second, like, I see this guy over here, da-da-da-da-da, and it would just be, like, just a way to get them close, and then pepper them with other stuff, and who knows what kind of comes out from that. And so, but then it also, because they already know you're going to come over at some point, I would then go over at other times. Mm-hmm. And I think it, I don't know, it's a role that is very pivotal in a broadcast, but it's also a role that can be cut. So you want to make sure you're not cut. Like, okay, you know, you might do a great pregame hit that was solid. Not really that riveting. You might do a nice two questions at halftime. Cool, we didn't really learn that much, but we got Caleb Porter on air. And then you might do a nice postgame interview where the guy said literally nothing, but we did it. And you're like, that's not good enough.
Yeah.
Like, that's the standard, then of course this job would get cut someday. So we got to go further. We got to go more. And I like that. Like, I felt great after a broadcast. If I brought something where it was unique, it was interesting, it was different, your head's on a swivel, you're looking at, you know, what, you're basically just like you're like a crime reporter or something. Like, what's going on with here? Like, I got the clues, like, what's going to happen? And I found that really exciting. It gave me adrenaline and it was great. But I mean, you don't get that every game, like in an MLS game in April, you know, like, it's not always that exciting. So
we're going to talk more about adrenaline later on here when we get into what you're doing with stand-up comedy, which is fascinating to me. One thing that stood out to me when I was doing sideline reporting is that because that adrenaline is going on with the people that you're covering, it's actually very different than from a print reporter's perspective, mm-hmm. where when I'm wearing that hat and I speak to somebody in a press conference or even in the locker room afterward, they've had a chance to cool down.
Oh, yeah.
Whereas I had a couple moments in the heat or just after the moment when something crazy had happened where I remember one particular, it was a Red Bulls DC United game, rivalry game, and Jesse Marsh was the coach of the Red Bulls, and I went to school with Jesse Marsh. Like, I'm friends with Jesse Marsh. And yet he had some to do, like, argument with Ben Olsen right after the game, where things had gotten pretty heated. And so Jesse then comes on to my sideline interview right after the game, and my first question to him is, what just happened?
Good, perfect.
But no, like, and Jesse kind of looks at me and goes, nothing. And that was it. Yeah. I was just like, are you kidding me? No, but, like, and it was not the answer I was necessarily expecting from him, but you don't know what you're going to get in a heated adrenaline-filled moment. How often did you run into situations like that?
All the time. And I think that, as you know, you as a sideline reporter in that moment, even though you're probably not going to get an answer, you have to ask that question. Because probably the images on your TV are that,
right.
Is that, that's what's going on. And that's the only thing someone at home cares about in that moment. They don't care whoever won or whoever scored a goal. They're like, what are they yelling at each other about? And I had that, speaking of, you know, and we'll see him again this year. But when Caleb Porter was with Portland, him and Brad Evans were barking at each other right before halftime as they're walking off. And I was just going to grab, I was grabbing him and they were yelling at each other. And I was just like, why are you yelling at it? What are you yelling about? And he's just like, no, nothing, right? Which is exactly what I thought he would respond. But everyone seeing that image right there is wondering what's going on. So you just have to ask that question. And that's the thing. Like, they don't, hard part, and you know this, is they don't want you around. They don't want you to be finding these things out or asking these questions.
Right.
But as I always tell them, like, I have to do this stuff. I'm just trying to do my job. And when I did hockey and I covered former Ducks head coach Randy Carlyle, you know, I'd say, oh, you know, what happened to Cam Fowler's leg? Oh, why are you asking me that question? You always ask me about injuries. I'm just doing my job, right? And like, people, and it's weird. You're like, we have this back and forth every day when you are a reporter with these coaches, right. and whatnot. And they want to look good. They don't want their dirty laundry being aired out, but I want to air the dirty laundry out because that's what people want to know. Yeah. And we don't work for them or for the league. Like, we work for our networks. And so, yes, you have to understand, of course, there's a relationship and, you know, there's broadcast rights. There's all these things that factor into it. But at the end of the day, it's your job. And during the Women's World Cup, like, I love that. Like, that was the best experience I've ever had as a broadcaster ever. Very difficult, but it just, I took, because there were so many, like, there's so much red tape on you in every game you did because FIFA was just like, no, you're not going to do that. You're not going to do that. You're going to sit here. You can't go to the bathroom. You got to do this. I was like, no, I felt this like rebellious 13-year-old. I'm like, no, I'm going to get my information because I would almost disguise myself. It sounds so bad, but I would sneak around the stadium at like half time. I'll never forget this it was Norway, not England, because I managed to make my way into like the tunnel for that, which I was not allowed to.
Nice.
But I was yelling, or I was in a Norway game. I went up into the stands and I came down through where the tunnel was and I waited and I yelled at Evan Pellerud, the head coach at the time. I was like, Evan, what happened to, I forgot what player it was, like, Trina Ronning, or I forget her exact name. And he's like, oh yeah, calf like injury, not coming back in second half. Boom. Okay, great.
Nice.
Got that information. But I had to run through the stands and yell at him through the tunnel.
FIFA makes you have a higher degree of difficulty to get to information because they literally don't let you stand at midfield. Mm-hmm. You have to be on the end lines, which makes it really hard.
Yeah, very difficult. Yeah. And I realized at the time, like, you know, my bosses weren't expecting me to be running through the stands to get like an injury update, but like that's the goals I set on myself. Like, I want to, you know, I'd always ask questions in press conferences, and there's so many people that will not ask that tough question. And you're like, you know what? I'm going to get shot one way or another, so I'm just going to ask this.
And there was one thing you were doing that I thought was really cool, and this is, I think you maybe started this when you were at ESPN, where some of the stuff that you didn't use during a game, you would then film something afterward and then post it online, because this is like good information.
Right.
And I thought that was brilliant. I had actually never seen that done before by a sideline person.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. Like, I had had so many good stories left over that didn't make it in the game. And that's like, you know, that's, I even told my boss, I said, I hope you don't think I'm trying to troll you right now by being like, hey, look at all the info I had that didn't get on. But because the way the game moves, sometimes a story will happen in one moment and then we're on to the next thing and you don't go back to it. So I thought, hey, these are all really good bits. And I had one even, because then we thought, oh, digital is like, let's do this. Like, let's, you know, put this up on the web and kind of things like that. You know, it was when, speaking back again, when Clint had his whole heart issue,
right.
He gave advice to Drew Moore when he went through his heart condition and surgery and all that, and consulted him on everything. And it was such an in-depth relationship on that. And we didn't get to it in the game, and no one had ever heard of it before. Mm. And I obviously cleared it with Seattle before it went on, because that's, you know, information that Drew Moore was telling me about Clint. And we want to make sure that they were okay with it, which they were. And that didn't make it in the broadcast. So I thought, hey, let's... this is a great story. This could be a story on MLSsoccer.com right now or anywhere.
Sure.
And if I don't tell it, like, someone else will tell it in a month or something.
Right.
That will come out. So then I just thought, here are my top three stories, and I just riffed them all. And Chris Wondolowski, who works, not the soccer player, but the digital reporter, content creator from ESPN, helped me film that stuff, and it was great. And then I had a lot of sideline reporters from other sports reach out and say, this is such a good idea, because every sideline reporter feels that, I didn't get in the game enough.
It's the biggest frustration, I think, with the job.
It is. And, people will say, oh, wow, like, I this is what I hate, is when I'm watching games with people and they say, oh, sideline reporters are so useless. Like, they don't say anything. I said, no, that's just a preconceived notion that you have, that when you see this usually female come on, oh, she shouldn't, what's she doing taking away from the game? Like, a really weird old school social construct of women being used in broadcasting, where, no, do you know how difficult it was for that broadcaster to get that one sentence on air?
Yeah.
Like, you have to fight, like, being like, I remember, yeah, like, being like, come down to me, come down to me, come down to me, I can add, I can add, I can add, like, yelling it, and they have to turn my mic down because they'd be like, okay, we need to do other stuff. But yeah, so it's frustrating. But then when you do get on, you're on, you can't mess up. Like, that's your one chance to do your stuff. Like, show us why you should be on. And so that's why you push the boundaries.
Yeah. I guess the question that a lot of people in the soccer community would have is, we, you know, got to know you and your work as a sideline reporter, and, you know, you seem to enjoy it. We enjoyed following what you were doing. Why are you doing it anymore?
Well, I may do it again in the future. Yeah, I definitely miss doing it. I, you know, we met obviously through it. I met so many great people, I work with such great people, and I always put this out there whenever I did games or even whatnot, but MLS and the soccer players, the coaches, the front offices were always just so respectful, and I never felt uncomfortable. I never felt unwanted. I always felt that they really wanted me around, and just never this, you know, you hear about awful stories in other sports. I never felt that in MLS, which was great. And I loved my weekends all the time. Yeah, it's kind of weird. I think we all learn in life, like, it's kind of like sliding doors, right? Like, you make one decision and you go one way, but then maybe you end up back sort of in the place that you're supposed to be. I would love to cover the league again. If anyone's listening and needs someone to report or sideline report, I would certainly take that call and want to be back in it, because also when you cover it, like, you just get to know everyone so well, and you know stories, and you know the background of these players and their lives and their families and everything like that, and the history. And you can't just, like, you can dive into something like that you don't know very well, but it's a lot better when you know it and you know the people. And so, if any one of the networks called me up, I'd say, yeah. I'm like, who's listening right now? I am wearing a shirt that says, call my agent. So you can do that. No, but yeah, who knows what the future holds, but I'd love to cover soccer again and MLS for sure.
You were at Barstool?
Yes.
For a while?
Mm-hmm.
What was that like?
It was interesting. It was obviously very different from sideline reporting. And, you know, a lot of people ask me why I left sideline reporting and whatnot to go there. First of all, I would love to host again. Like, you know, you said you met me on Fox Soccer Daily. Like, I loved that. I love hosting soccer. I think people like what Rob Stone does and, you know, Dan and Sebastian Salazar and Adrian Healy, all the hosts. Like, I love hosting. Mm-hmm. And I would really like to work into that space going forward. Mm-hmm. And sideline reporting, but take on more responsibility. So when I was approached with the idea of going to Barstool, there was a couple opportunities we were going to do that would involve me having more responsibility in actually a soccer space for a network on a digital side, which it didn't work out. It didn't, nothing came from that. And that's why I will never mention really what it was, but that was something that really drew me there. And I also worked with Michael Davies, as people would know from Embassy Row and Men in Blazers, on a college football tailgate show. So, and I've loved Michael's work. I think he's brilliant and I like him as a person. So I went to work there for that. But I think that the space, if anyone knows who I am and sort of my background, who I'd like to be known for, is probably not the right place for me to be, was Barstool. And so I totally understand and respect what they've been able to do in their space. And they're such a sticky brand. And when I walk down the street in New York, I get approached all the time by people who are Barstool fans. More so than any other network I've ever worked for.
It's interesting.
Ever. It's wild. People, you know, come up to me all the time. So you understand how sticky that brand is. I think it's different being, and I can only speak to my experience, obviously, but I think it's different working for the brand and consuming the brand. So yeah, it just, I think it worked out best for both of us. The show I worked on is doing great on SiriusXM, Barstool Breakfast, and I'm doing great. So
good.
So yeah, but it gave me perspective on then like getting to try different things. You see, what is it you like about these things? What do you not like about them? And then having some time off now to figure out where I want to go towards, you get to see where the industry is going. Mm-hmm. Like, you, we're never really afforded this opportunity to say, hey, I'm going to press pause on my career and see, wait, what are the cool things that are happening? You know, what, you know, we've mentioned other places like, oh, what's DAZN doing in a digital space with soccer internationally? You know, what's beIN Sports doing? What are all these different places? What's the gambling atmosphere like? What's esports like? And so you, me, as like a broadcaster who's 31, I'm almost like, I'm at this weird sort of fork in the road of, you can go and do local sports and you could be a sports anchor here in New York, you know, work for, I'm like, you can just label all these places that I'm sure they would hire me. Yeah, right. But like, you could work for SNY, you could work for NBC local or whatever, or you can do something completely different and work for some of these streaming places. And obviously MLS is doing a lot of stuff like that too. And I've gotten to freelance for them. So it's hard because we know, we don't know where everything's going, and it might be 5 years until these things are sort of really up and at them. But you know, even places like ESPN Plus, like there, and Taylor and Mark doing, and Alejandro doing MLS Rewind, which is great, and also having a gambling component in there, I think is huge. And I think that for what I've heard for ESPN Plus, it's only just going to get bigger with soccer rights. So soccer is a great place to be in, and that's why, as a fan and as a broadcaster, I wouldn't leave that world ever.
I would say also too, like, you broke news as well when you were doing what you're doing. I remember during the strike or the near strike in, I guess it was early 2015. What did you break about? You broke something like important.
Yeah, about the CBA being finished.
That was a big deal.
Like, it was my first ever MLS tweet. No, I'm joking. But like, I hadn't even started covering the league yet. And it just worked out that the contacts I had, after I had been pushing them on it, I just got it 5 more minutes, not even 25 seconds before someone else, you know?
So you still got it.
And then, and that was a great way to sort of like break onto the league and into the scene. And I liked, you know, breaking news is good and bad. It's like you get the craziest high from it, but then everyone hates you. And like, literally, you're the only person that should feel good about it, but you feel bad about it because you're like, wait, like, did I do something wrong? Because no one is happy. Maybe your boss is, because you did it for the network. So, but it is, it shows you've got journalistic chops, which,
yeah,
you know, coming from, that's my background, and that's what I like to be, I like as a facet of like who I am as a broadcaster. So I haven't broken any news in a while, and it's funny because I'm not in, I mean, I'm currently just freelancing and trying to figure out my future, so I have heard break, like I have gotten scoops on stuff, and I just let it go.
You should put that stuff out on Twitter. You should.
I'm like, am I, like, do I do this anymore? But yeah, that's how you kind of get back into the scene, is information is capital. So
that's really funny. So I want to ask you about your fascinating stand-up stuff you're doing, which is, you put in a lot of time.
I realized this the other day, how much time I've dedicated toward it.
So what's your story with it? How did this happen?
Yeah, okay, so I mentioned to you before, but so I started doing improv comedy at Upright Citizens Brigade in New York. If anyone's ever thinking about doing improv, or you're fascinated by it, it is such a great tool. You don't have to be an actor. There's no such thing as being, like, getting paid to be an improviser, even unless you're on SNL, which is, like, obviously not going to happen. But it's so great in terms of just getting more comfortable in front of people and listening and responding. So that's all that it's about. And so I started doing it last January. And then in the first couple levels, you get a suggestion from the audience and you have to do a monologue based off the suggestion. Could be rug or cup, right? And you have to think, oh, okay, I've got a story about, oh, my dog throwing up on the rug. And so you go up and you tell this story that has to have some kind of meaning about it. And I always was a person who would go up and tell these stories, these monologues, and people came to me and said, you know what, you tell great stories, you have a presence on stage, why wouldn't you do stand-up? And I thought, oh, sure, that's like the next step, I guess. Also, though, in the back of my head, I've never wanted to do stand-up comedy. This has never been a goal of mine. And so I took a class with Caroline's, which is a comedy place in New York, which was great. Every week we would go with a couple minutes of new material. And I just started with stories. Like, what are some weird stories? And if anyone follows me on Instagram, you'll know that I like to pick out weird things in my life that happen. And I realized I was doing Instagram stories with a punchline. Like, I was doing a bit, you know, and I would record something and I would in my head be already structuring it like to have a punchline. And I thought, okay, well, you're kind of already doing this in a way. Again, never wanting to do comedy. And so I did the class, performed at Caroline's in November. And as I expected, even though I thought I would retire after that, I'm like, no, I like this. I like this adrenaline high. I love having a response from people. And we've talked about, like, in TV, you're just looking at a lens.
Right.
And there might be millions of people on the other side of that lens, but you don't even know, which is great because it helps you not get, like, super freaked out. At the same time, you don't get that instant response, which you would in live theater and comedy and performing. And so I did it again in January. And then it kind of just snowballs where you think, I have a 5-minute set. I have more ideas for jokes. I kind of know how to write in a way that feels natural to me. Is it the way I'm supposed to do it? I don't know. I'm still stumbling through this. But I had people reach out to me on Facebook saying, hey, can you do my show? And I'm not getting paid for any of this. Obviously, I have to bring people to shows. So if anyone wants to come to a show, I need you there so I can go on. And then it honestly just clicked this past weekend. I did a show at the New York Comedy Club, which I requested to book. So you send in a video. It's like, feel like I'm back trying to get a job in broadcasting again. And I go on stage with Janine Garofalo, who's an actress and comedian, was headlining. I was so nervous. I think I rehearsed my set 10,000 times in my head, which, if you've ever seen me on the sideline, Grant, or anyone else out there, I rehearse my hits over and over and over again. And people say, Shaw Brown, my old producer from Fox, who everyone would know in the soccer world is a brilliant mind, would say, stop rehearsing so much because you're going to mess up if you mess up a line, like, because if it's so rehearsed, you're not going to be able to kind of get to the next line. I said, no, I think this is, I know how short of time we get. We get like 30 to 40 seconds to tell a story. So I thought, you got to hit the nail on the head because you can't waffle. You can't ramble. You got to say 3 sentences essentially perfectly. So if I rehearse that 500 times, I'll say it right once. And that's how I approached comedy. So then, just to get back, like, I have gone to tons of open mics now because that's where you test out your stuff to see if it works. Like, you know, John Mulaney and Jerry Seinfeld don't just like go up and do their set and it's great. Like, you have to try that out. And maybe you'll hear, I go to Laughing Buddha, the Climate Lounge, and I go like, I went every day last week. And it's hard because it's like the worst, just you're in a basement of like a dingy bar with like a bunch of weirdos who also don't have work at 4:30 on a Thursday. So you're like, who are these people? Everyone's like a little weird. And you go up and try your stuff. And for me, I just wanted to get comfortable doing it. Like, because you're going up there and you're looking at people and you're trying to, it's different. It's not, you're not just looking at a camera. So then, but then Saturday when I did it, there was a moment that clicked where I thought, okay, I can do this. Wow. And I was like, and I mean, the laughs help. The room was amazing. I got so many laughs. Nice. I thought, okay, Julie, like, let's keep doing this. And so when people have asked me in my time off, like, what have you been doing? To be honest, this has been a really nice deflection saying, like, I haven't been watching 18 hours of Netflix every day. I've been doing stand-up comedy, which I also have been doing that too, but I've been doing stand-up comedy, and people respect it because it's actually the hardest thing I've ever done.
It scares the crap out of me. I can never do it, I'll be honest.
The thing is, Grant, I think if you had a set in your head, which you know, okay, I've got five jokes essentially and I know they're gonna probably elicit some kind of response, you'd feel more comfortable.
Maybe, but I just feel like that's one of the most naked things you can do. Mm-hmm. Is to go up on a stage where it's just you, and making people laugh is, I just think that's something very difficult, but also you're putting so much of yourself out there in a situation like that, right?
Oh yeah, definitely. And people, it's really interesting because some people will, it's so hard to tell what people will laugh at. You know, like sometimes some of the jokes I wrote that would be like layups got crazy laughs, where you'd think, because you're trying to surprise people. That's mm-hmm. the biggest thing. You tell a setup and you're trying to go complete left turn and trick their way of thinking. And that's what makes people laugh a lot of the time. And these were pretty basic setups and they elicited crazy laughs, whereas then some other stuff you're like, that was really smart what I wrote, and that took me like so long to perfect. Every single word I have in mind, even just like, I had one where talking about Canada legalizing weed, and I had one of my lines was, oh, you know, Canada legalizing weed is like your mom quoting Eminem, it loses its cool factor. And someone said, why don't you say Canada legalizing weed the government being your drug dealer is like, it loses its cool factor. It's like your mom quoting Eminem. So putting the mom quoting Eminem in the last bit changes how people even respond to it. And you're just like, wow, it is so hard to do. But having done it, I'm like, okay, I can do this. Not like I'm going to be like have my own Netflix special, but I'd like to use it as a tool for wherever broadcast I end up with. I'd like to use it in that regard. And to be honest, comedy and doing this and hearing other people's stories and seeing their lives, because that's what comedy's all about. It's just like, oh, I have a joke about being a sports broadcaster and how we do interviews in the locker room most of the time, and how that's like having a board meeting in a public restroom of a bus station where no one cares, but they kind of hope you see their dick. So, I don't know if I'm allowed to say that on this podcast.
Yes, you are.
But yeah, because it's really weird to be doing that in a locker room where guys are changing and you're like, this is uncomfortable. So, and I spoke with some talent bookers afterwards. They're like, that's good. That stuff is great because no one knows that. And it's like, but they kind of do because they see the interviews on TV and they're like, why is the guy he doesn't have a shirt on? They're all in there while he's naked. Like, what is this? So that's, you kind of have to rely on your own background. And I like that because then it's unique. I know when I go up on stage, no one else is telling that joke.
Right.
Because I have heard a lot of the same jokes. And you're like, oh God, I would hate to go up and be like, oh, you just heard this 5 minutes ago, but...
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Yeah, so anyways, long story short, and then it also made me think, as much as I still would like to have sports and soccer and hockey and all the things I like going forward, there's a big wide world out there, and I would love to host a late night show someday. And I've said that, like, I would love to be Jimmy Kimmel, like Jimmy Fallon. Okay, I know you guys are like, wow, that's really sex. That's never going to happen. But you think, if you don't say it and try to do it, these guys know how to do stand up. They know how to write a monologue. They know how to find the funny. Well, then you have to know how to do that if you want that. So
no, that makes total sense. It, on your Instagram, I've noticed that lately you've had like numbers when you post video or photos from your sets where you have like 5/100. What is that about?
So I've decided to do 100 mics, like 100 either open mics and shows all together, because wow. I'd like to do it this year. Wow. Which means I probably have to go right now and do like 5 tonight. My friend last year did 100. She ate 100 burgers in 1 year, and she documented each burger. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to do that for the, and it keeps, it holds you accountable, because then, well, now I've committed to this. Everyone's going to ask me about it. But I had a comedian tell me, you really can't tell how good you are until you've done 100 shows at least. Because you see some of these comedians have done 1,000 shows.
Right.
They'll do 4 shows in 1 night. That's insane. But when you know what your set is and you can kind of bring things in and out, and on the weekend, they told me right before I went on, you have 5 minutes. You get the light at 4. So they put the light on when you have to wrap up. That's when you start telling your closer. Well, first of all, I didn't know where the light was. So I was like looking. I'm like, oh, good. There's no light on. And then I was like, oh, gosh. I looked up and I was over. But in my head, I had to take out a bunch of jokes that I had wrote the night before. And I was like, oh, great. Like, these were good. But they say, like, what is the line? Something like you have to be able to, like, kill your darlings, essentially. Like you have to be able to cut a joke and get rid of it, and even if you think it's the best thing ever, it's dead, it's done. And also, I realized, had I been a better comic, I would have ended on this amazing laugh I got, really destroying the Knicks, and just been like, all right, I'm Julie Stewart Banks, yeah, see you guys. But then I kept going, and it was good, but that would have been a really nice one to end on. So it's all just experience, like, you know, it's all just an extra skill and whatever. So
no, that makes total sense. Just the amount of reps. I mean, like, that's kind of what we've always learned in TV, you know, just the more reps, the better. Now, if people out there would like to see you in person here in New York, what is the easiest way to do that?
Well, I'm starting to get a little more comfortable with, like, actually inviting people, because someone told me, don't invite anyone yet. Because you don't want people to see you right now because you suck. But I realized that I think having a bit of the background of, I trick people in a way. Like, I'm comfortable on stage that I think people think I'm better than I am, because I almost borrow from a John Mulaney, in that he is very polished when he does his stuff. Like, there's no ums or ahs, which are also a strategy I've learned from comics, that a lot of comics will make it seem as though they're just coming up with it on the spot. Right? They're like, have you guys seen this? Right? But they would have planned that all out. Whereas me, I'm just like, I know what I want to say, as I said. I don't have any ums and ahs. I'm performing, which is not great, but it makes people think that you're better than you are. So, saying that, follow me on Instagram, JulieSB_, and I will be posting stuff on there. I'm hoping to keep it going, like, as much as possible. Do some more of these New York Comedy Club ones, because they were great, and see where it goes from there. So,
well, Julie Stewart Banks, it has been an absolute pleasure to have you on the show. Good luck with everything, and thank you.
Thank you, and sorry, guys, for a lot of talking right there, but it's been a while, so, you know, I made up for lost time.
Thanks for listening to the Planet Football Podcast. I'd like to thank Julie Stewart Binks, as well as everyone at Cadence 13 and Sports Illustrated who supports this podcast. Just a quick reminder, it's a huge help if you subscribe to, rate, and review the podcast. It helps people find us. See you next time.